Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us for this Irish UK webinar. The aim of the webinar is to help you to understand more about how you can actually use Irish UK. And we've got four speakers this morning. My colleague Joe Alcock from Evidence Base at Birmingham City University will be providing an introduction, and then we have three speakers from participating Irish UK institutions who have very kindly agreed to share a little of how they use Irish UK. We'll be having a question and answer session at the end. If you can type your questions in the chat box as we go along, indicating which of our speakers there are a question for, then we'll take them all together at the end because there may be recurring themes. The webinar is being recorded and will be made available on the Irish UK website afterwards. So I'll start by handing over to my colleague Joe Alcock. If you could take over now, thank you.
Thanks very much for the introduction, Anne, and welcome everyone. So as Anne mentioned, I'm going to give you a brief overview to start the webinar, but the focus of today really is to share the way that Iris is being used by some of our participating repositories. So just to give you a quick overview for those of you who aren't as familiar with Iris. So Irish UK is a national aggregation service and it enables UK institutional repositories to share and expose their usage statistics. It's done at an individual item level and it's based on a global standard using Counter. So the way that IRIS works is it brings in the raw download data from the UK institutional repositories for all the item types within all the repositories that are participating. It then processes that raw data into Counter compliance statistics. And you can see from the graph on the bottom of the slide there the growth of Irish UK right from the beginning in 2012. And you can see the blue line shows how many participating repositories. We're currently actually at 82, I believe, at the moment. This is the latest screenshot. I think we're at 82 at the moment. And then the other bars show how many items downloads have been recorded for, how many articles, and the number of articles with DOIs. There's a whole host of other statistics, but this is just to give you an overview of the growth of Irish. Thanks, Paul, for confirming it's 82 at the moment. So how does Irish UK help institutions? That's what the focus of today's webinar is going to be about. How is it actually used in practice? Well, it facilitates comparable standards-based measurements. As I've mentioned, it uses the Counter standard, so people are able to then use those as that reputable standard. It provides an evidence base for repositories to develop policies and initiatives to help support their institutional objectives. And it provides consistent and comprehensive statistics, and particularly presents opportunities for benchmarking at a national level. We recently have been analysing the survey data from 2015. Earlier this year we had a survey, and one of the key benefits of IRIS was benchmarking capabilities, which previously wasn't really available. So that's one of the key advantages. We spoke to a number of different institutions who use IRIS last year and produced a series of use cases. They're all available online at that link there on the support pages. Just to give you a flavour of some of the things, there's information on providing standards-based reliable repository statistics. Some examples of people using IRIS statistics to report to institutional management. Some using it to report to researchers, so for their to understand how their individual items are being used, to use for their review processes or to feed back to funders, possibly. For benchmarking purposes, as mentioned, and also for supporting advocacy activities, so using the statistics during advocacy, such as presentations to departments, that kind of thing. So those are some of the examples, and if you have a look at that webpage, you can download the use cases in PDF form and have a look. And each one includes a little bit of information about how you could use IRIS, the sorts of reports you may wish to use that could help you do these activities, and also some quotes from some of the institutions that are using IRIS in each of those different ways. It's now time for me to hand over to our first speaker. So as I mentioned, we're going to have three speakers today. We'll have Alison from the University of Reading, Amy from Aberystwyth University, and Chris from the Open University. And so I'm going to hand you over firstly to Alison.
Thank you, Jo. Hello, everybody. I'm going to show you how we use two IRIS reports, IR2 and RR1, to provide information to a senior committee at the University of Reading. So I work with the Planning and Strategy Office to provide termly statistics reports about our institutional repository centre to a committee that monitors research excellence. And the committee is chaired by the Deputy VC, who's responsible for research and innovation. And the membership of the committee includes the deans and representatives from Planning and Strategy and from the Research and Enterprise Office. So the purpose of the statistics report is to inform them about the use of the repository, so to show what's in it, that items are being deposited and downloaded, and how our downloads compare to repositories at similar universities. So it's an opportunity really for us to demonstrate the value of the repository and also to retain their support for it. However, the report needs to be really concise and visual because there's actually very little time to present the report at the meetings, and I'm often not there to present it myself, so I have to rely on colleagues to present it for me. And this is where the charts which we can derive from IRIS downloads become really important for us. So this slide shows our downloads for 2014, which are exported from IRIS as a CSV file. So we use these to create charts for the report. And one of the benefits of looking at download statistics in a table like this and in the charts is that you can quite easily spot anomalies or oddities in the data, and then you can make a decision about whether you need to make changes or not. So I've highlighted two things that I spotted here in this download. For example, I thought that our books downloads looked unexpectedly high. We've actually got only 23 full text books in the repository. So I looked into those a bit further, and I found there are actually downloads of full conference proceedings, which we've archived as books. The other thing that struck me as odd is we've got a category here called text, which appears in IRIS, but not actually in our repository. And when I looked more closely at that, I could see that that was capturing book section downloads, and I wondered then whether really that should have been merged with the book section itself. So at this stage, I could have moved the conference downloads from books, or I could have merged the book section and text, but then I've had to remember to do that for future reports. And I thought if I forgot to do that, or I didn't do it in the same way, it would therefore compromise consistency. So I decided not to do that. And I also think what we're looking at here is trends rather than specific numbers. And so I think it's okay to leave the statistics here as they are. So what we did then is we created a chart using the data which is in the boxed area. And this is the result. So this shows the types of content being downloaded, the numbers of downloads, but most noticeably it shows the proportion of downloads across types. We did try presenting it alongside a pie chart like this for the previous year, but actually the proportions remained very much the same, and the growth in downloads between the 2 years wasn't particularly obvious from a chart like this. So we used the same data and the same CSV output, and we added the 2013 data into it as well, and we created this chart instead. So I think what it has to show you here is that you have to choose the appropriate chart type for the information that you need to convey and where you want to put the emphasis. But the easy thing about this is that once you've got a download, a CSV file, it's really flexible and you can experiment with the best way to present it. It just depends on what emphasis you need to show. The second report that we use is Repository Report 1, and in this case we've used it to look at download trends for articles. So you can see here that the filters are set for 2013 and 2014. We've selected article type, and we've narrowed it to repositories in England, but I didn't narrow it further to our own disk band because I wanted to pick repositories outside that to compare ourselves with. So we created two charts from that search. This first one compares downloads for articles from CentAur in 2013 and 2014, and our committee really liked this because, of course, it shows an upward trend in our downloads. But interestingly, they spotted that the peaks and troughs were similar each year, and that seemed to give them confidence in the statistics because they could actually relate this to recognisable points in the academic year. My last slide shows a chart from the same CSV export from RR1, and this time we selected downloads for articles from CentAur for 2014, and we also picked seven other repositories from competitor institutions. They're anonymised here, but they weren't anonymised in the report that we presented. And here we've limited it to articles, partly because of the focus of the current open access agenda, but also because we were trying to compare like with like. So it would have been less meaningful, I think, to have included all types of output, because the content policies do differ between repositories. Now, not surprisingly, the committee found this chart to be the most interesting because of the comparison with other institutions and the way they could see how they ranked. Luckily, Reading appeared somewhere in the middle, so this was okay. However, it did raise a lot of questions, which are quite difficult to answer. And the first one, really, the main one, is why do some repositories have such high downloads and why are they higher than our downloads? There are a number of thoughts I've got on this. One is that they could have more content, but when I looked into it, it wasn't always the case. The other thought is that maybe their content is more popular or it's promoted in a better way. But lastly, I think that maybe the content policies differ between repositories even when it comes down to an article, and this might actually be a reason for the difference in downloads too. At Reading, when we deposit an article in the repository, we only permit the scholarly articles and not necessarily the other contents that you might find in journals. So if we permitted, for example, book reviews to be deposited in Centaur, maybe that would increase our downloads a little bit. I'm going to finish with three concluding remarks about our experience of using IRIS with our Committee for Research Excellence. Firstly, once we'd identified what we actually wanted to show in our statistics reports, then the IRIS reports were really, really easy to use. The hardest part, really, is deciding what it is that you need to show. And secondly, the ability to benchmark has turned out to be really important. It puts our repository in context alongside others, but it also acts as an incentive to add content so that we increase our position in the downloads chart. And then lastly, the collective download pictures presented by IRIS give credibility to repositories, including our own, but I also think that gave credibility to the way we reported on our report to this committee.
Thank you very much, Alison. That was very interesting and hopefully very helpful to those listening. A reminder to everybody listening that if you've got any questions for Alison, please type them in the chat box. We're now going to hand over to Amy from Aberystwyth University, who's going to tell us a little about how they use IRIS UK. So if you could switch your microphone on, Amy, over to you. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Jo. Yes, I'm Amy Staniforth, and I'm the Institutional Repository and Metadata Team Leader at Aberystwyth, and I'm based in Information Services, which is a converged library and IT department. Half of my job is cataloguing of e and print materials in a sort of traditional library cataloguing type way, and the other half I'm responsible for our Institutional Repository, CADR. And that involves me being on the Open Access Group, which there are members in Information Services and in Research, Business and Innovation, our research office. And I'm on the steering group, the Open Access Steering Group, and that also includes research data management. So we sort of cover a few areas. And I should just say our institutional repository is DSpace, it's called CADR, and we have a CRIS, Pure, and there is a connector between the two. So why a letter and why IRIS UK stats, part one? Well, our institutional repository, CADR, was established in 2007. We did have a manager in place. There was a funded post for a few years. After that post, when the funding stopped for that, it was a responsibility for CADR was dispersed. So there wasn't a lot happening. How shall I put it? Well, in terms of context, then in 2012, we bought Pure, our CRIS system, and that's based in Research, Business and Innovation, which I think is significant. We have a really good working relationship across the two departments, but I think in people's minds that means that CADR is in the library and Pure is in the research office. So we have some sort of connecting to do in people's minds. I should also say, in terms of context, that staff members could all submit their own and deposit their own material into CADA initially. And that means we have a real mixed bag of metadata. So when I started in April 2013, we had the CRIS and we had our CADA, but the connection wasn't working. We spent about 9 months working on that connector. At the same time, our DSpace stats weren't working, so we didn't have any statistics. And it was not a time that we wanted to draw attention to the repository, to CADA, especially when we're trying to advocate for open access. We didn't then want to be heading to our staff and asking them to then look at our open access repository and find it hadn't been updated for 6 months. But by October, well, actually, it's been working for a little while. Then in October last year, we tried to time our DSpace update to 1.8, which we were quite excited by, for the International Open Access Week in October. We managed that, and that was really the moment that we wanted to start drawing attention to CADA again. But we had lost our historical data, so the DSpace stats started from zero again in October. So luckily we'd been members of Irish UK for a while. So part two, why else did we need a newsletter? Well, we wanted to raise awareness of open access, but also not just what it is, why it's good, but and even what people have to do, but what kind of systems we have at Aberystwyth that staff are used to that will facilitate that open access. They've been using CADA, as I said, for a long time. Then it wasn't used for a while. We wanted to sort of remind them that it was at the other end of them depositing their articles in Pure, and they should all be quite familiar with Pure. So we wanted to kind of connect the two in people's minds. And unlike Alison, in a way, we haven't been asked for any statistics internally, really. But what we wanted to do was be quite personal about this and use our IRIS stats to name people. That's what's quite it's an advantage for us, because there's a lot of people who, for one, don't know that they're doing open access, so it's good to name them and have their name seen. But also people in disciplines who think that perhaps their discipline doesn't do open access, or they don't need to do open access. So naming their colleagues at quite a small university, especially senior colleagues, is we think that could be quite useful in the long run. Also, sort of putting handles, our permanent identifiers, so people could link very quickly to articles. That's quite powerful, we think, in part because of the linking, but also because people see the kinds of journals that are doing open access that allow deposit in repositories. So for us, that's a real, it's a way of engaging. And we also wanted reusable statistics. I'm sure, like many people, towards before submitting for REF, we had a lot of very last minute staff contacting us asking for download stats. And we didn't have any at the time because our DSpace stats weren't working. But because Irish UK has a shibboleth login, I'm quite keen, as a slow burner anyway, to have people perhaps, you know, we could point them in that direction and they can look at their own work, which I think they'll find quite interesting. So what did we need? Well, we needed something very simple. I have seen lots of sort of very sexy newslettery statistic type things that other repositories and CRIS systems do, and we don't have that. We simply don't have the time. As I said, nobody's asked us for a newsletter, nobody's asked us for stats, so we just need something that's very simple to add on to our jobs at the end of each month. We needed it to be quite adaptable, because with our connector we've been changing, we're having to change quite a lot. We may end up buying the Pure Advanced Portal instead of using CADA, so we wanted something that would be very easy across different sorts of systems. We also needed it to be bilingual, and in our, we have a little team of three, two FTEs, and none of us are first language Welsh speakers, so we needed a template there that we could just slot things into with minimum fuss. And we wanted the stats to be reliable and repeatable. We, as I said, our DSpace ones don't go very far back, and our Google Analytics have all just been a little bit crazy for reasons I won't go into now. But we wanted to be able to share the kind of stats that we use when we submit to SCONAHL, for example. We want to be able to use those cancer compliance stats for staff. And we needed a format for this newsletter to be very easy to share, so not difficult to open, very sort of simple. and that's what we've got. It's very basic. It's a little bit embarrassing when I see other people's, but it is easy to use, and we have been using it. It's working. And so quickly, this is our institution repository. It's the front page. We have our communities here, and this is our information services community. So we don't expect people to really go in through the institution repository. A lot like most of our articles, we expect it to be links. But it's a good place for us to store them. So this is the English language version from February 2015. And this is what somebody, this is the link that we would send around that people would get to. And then they can click on the full text there. And what they would see is one of these. They would see either the English, and I think we've got February's English version and January's Welsh version. So they'd see one of these. And I'll zoom in a second. I just wanted to show that it was very important to me that it was one page long and no longer. And again, we did have initially some nice sort of coloured pie charts of locations, of downloads, that sort of thing. But our Google Analytics got increasingly, well, actually less reliable. So we changed that, and we've used some more pure back-end stats instead. So these are our Irish UK stats. What we use are, I think it's the RR1 report, the item report. So we pick out the top five articles, and we put in the links. So we spent a little bit of time working out what was most important to go here. We put in the links, we put in as much of the title as we can, and as many of the authors as we can, and then the number of downloads, which we think is what's interesting to people. So they can see their colleagues' names, they can see an article, and they can get to it. We also use the ETD report, and so we include the top five theses, partly because we've had a thesis mandate in place since 2008, so we have quite a few, but it's often theses that have our highest downloads each month, so we thought it was important to acknowledge that. We're also doing a lot of talks at postgraduate events throughout the stages of postgrad research to talk about what they have to do to deposit, but also more generally about open access. So it's really great to be able to show them this, because I think it says that we think of postgraduates as being part of Aberystwyth research community, and that's quite nice. And I also think it's useful for their supervisors and colleagues in departments to see how many downloads theses get, and that CADO is quite useful in that. And then also just down the bottom here, we do say where the stats come from. So here, we wanted to point out it's got Shibboleth login. Again, I don't think many people will necessarily notice that and use it straight away, but it's something we can point to kind of encourage people if they want to have a look. And then we also have our contact addresses, our general library address, IS, and then our open access one, because we know that we really need people to be contacting us as much as possible. So we're just sticking wherever we can stick our email address and be very welcoming. We try and do that. Just very briefly, these are some of the pure stats that we use, and we're trying to, as you can see here, connect the two logos, CADIR and Pure, so people connect them in their minds. And we put a little bit of information about a couple of articles that are fully open access. We name people again. We say how many records have been validated and migrated to CADIR, because a lot of people don't know that this goes on. And again, we name some top authors. Again, just so we try and get more people named, so it looks like there's a real community of people out there doing things, and they're being acknowledged for doing well at open access. What we do then when we have that in CADIR is that at Aberystwyth we have a weekly bulletin. So an email goes around every Wednesday, and it goes to all staff and all postgraduates. It may even go to undergraduates, but it's quite well used considering it's a link. It's something that people are familiar with. So we put our monthly newsletter information in the notice board here. So when people then click on that, they'll get a long list of links and a little bit of information. And as you can see here, the CADIR newsletter is in between pensions and health and wellbeing. So really, even if people don't necessarily click on it, I'd like people to get used to seeing that and to see that it's there every month. And what they'll see then, depending whether they're in the English or the Welsh version, they'll see the newsletter that we saw earlier. So far, okay, yeah, according to Irish UK stats, because I suddenly thought, yes, I should be using those, this was about a month ago, we've had 45 downloads of the English newsletters and 5 of the Welsh versions. So it's not a revolution by any means. But that wasn't really why we wanted to do this. It was it's a way of sort of growing a consistent presence and a connection of the repository and our CRIS system. And we want it there in the background so that we can point it out to people just as a way of becoming more reliable and so that people are familiar with the context. It also means that we're having to see the statistics ourselves. I mean, as I said, we're not really asked and we don't, you know, unless you get an afternoon free where you want to look at some stats, it's not really something that happens. So it's really useful for me because I'm seeing who is doing well, I'm seeing which departments are overrepresented and which are underrepresented, and we're building up a picture now over the year. So actually that's quite empowering, and we are starting to use our stats internally as well. I think partly because of that issue that I said, with Pure being seen to be in the research office, perhaps internally in the library as well, we need to be thinking of it as our responsibility and open access as being something that we should be measuring. So I have started to use some of those stats in our monthly internal reports as well. And that's me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amy. Again, a very interesting presentation and hopefully useful in giving ideas as to how you might want to use Irish UK. I'm now going to hand over to our final speaker, Chris. So if you could turn your microphone on, please, Chris, and take over.
Thanks very much. Yes, very interesting, both Madison and Amy. And I hope we can draw out some of the points that they both made in these slides here. Just as a bit of context here at the OU, we've had IRIS for about 2 years, maybe 2.5 years. And we joined it when I was out of the office for paternity leave, and when I came back, I was hit by this remarkable figure that Iris was telling me, that we were getting thousands and thousands of downloads, which was a massive shock to me. And so the assumption I had is, if it's a shock to me, then it's going to be a massive shock to our institutional stakeholders. So the key thing for me with Iris is, we use the Iris stats to demonstrate the benefit of the repository to the institution. And that's what I'm going to try and show you now. So the first thing that we do is I simply scrape the monthly rankings that IRIS tells me of institutions, and then stick it in a table in isolation and show this to people. Now, if you should be able to see that there, you've got some big hitters right at the top, and the Open University is coming at 6th there. So there's very little I really need to do with this other than say, hey guys, we're doing brilliantly. We're not a massive institution in terms of our research capacity, but we're coming up 6th. Look at who we are comparing with. So that speaks for itself, really. I don't have to do anything with that. People see that and they say, wow, the repository is working. It's a benefit to the institution. These tables I've used in monthly benchmarking reports that I send to Associate Deans of Research, Management in the Library, and Management in the Research School. I think the real benefit of these figures at IRIS is that when you compare it with other things, hang on, this is before we get there, is that we saw it as a table, and this is an image. So whilst I take the point that Amy made about not having the time to think about these things visually, here at the OU, I've made a conscious effort to actually take this data and try and think about how we would visually represent this. This was an image that I took while I created for an infographic, or a monthly infographic. And it was picked up by people in the communications, and they weren't interested in everything in the infographic, but they were particularly interested in simply this visual. And they wanted to use this visual in a presentation given by the VC. So by thinking about the data and how you visualize the data, I think you can increase the impact that the stats that IRIS give you and all the other sources of data that we get when we run repositories at an institution. So this is on the right-hand side, you will see the monthly downloads of institutions, and on the left hand side you'll see a list of repositories by size. So that's the number of metadata items in the repositories, and then on the right you will see the downloads from IRIS. On the left hand side that comes from OpenDoor, because that's the most reliable thing I found. Again, so if you put these tables next to each other, for us at the Open University, we're coming sixth in our IRIS counts, and then we're somewhere like 27th in Open Door. We're actually 29th now, with something like 27,000 records. So what you're seeing here is you're presenting this data to people, and implicitly, people are making a saying, okay, so we're not a massive institution in terms of the number of items in our repository, but we are doing really, really well in terms of our downloads. Something is working really well here. Coming on from the point that Alison's making earlier about how do you explain this to people, one of the things that we say is, okay, one of the reasons we do so well is because we have a good proportion of open access content in our repository. I'm not going to say it's great, but we do well. So that's the benefit there. That's what we can say to people. Moving on, this is, I think, something very similar that we all do, and that's the monthly downloads that we talked about just a minute ago. I'm not so keen on this, because I think this reports on the exceptional items being downloaded in the repository rather than the majority of items. Repositories, in my experience, run very much with a classic long tail. So for us, I would say that 94% of our items make up half our downloads. So whilst this is great, and it goes to similar people every month, we aren't actually communicating with the majority of people that are using our repository and getting what you might call average downloads of, say, 10 a month. This, you know, these people are getting downloads of hundreds, perhaps 1,000 a month. These aren't necessarily people I'm interested in communicating to. I really want to communicate to the people who are getting average downloads, the majority of our users who are getting benefit from our own, that's our repository, but maybe not getting the headlines that this report gives. But it's well liked within the institution. You see it on departmental notice boards, so I'm going to keep going with it. What I've done here, I've glammed this one up using PictoChart, which is an infographic software. The benefit of doing that is I've color-coded it, and you can see which faculties are appearing here most. And interestingly, you will see that it's the grey is the language studies, our pink is our Institute of Educational Technology, and the purple is our business school. So what I assume and I draw out from that is that our institution obviously gives a lot of benefit to those disciplines that aren't served by an existing subject repository. One other thing about this is that I use the IR stat. I use IRIS stats here rather than IR stats here, IR stats 2, because when we were thinking about this 12 to 18 months ago, we found that IRIS was more reliable than IR stats. Since then, we have put filters in IR stats, so I think they are better, but we stick with IRIS additionally because it's an independent thing, so we can say to people, if we get questioning, say, guys, we just didn't make this up, this is an independent service. Touching on that, we do run IR stats, we do publish IR stats to our community, so we do have this friction of having IR stats and IRIS running in conjunction. We live with that. It's not perfect, but we haven't had any major problems about communicating to people the differences that they might get from IR stats 2 and IRIS. A couple of months ago, I was asked to do a benchmarking report on our content policy, and that wasn't the easiest thing to do, to try and benchmark it with other institutions. So what I did was I scraped the download data of a subset of repositories in IRIS, and then I identified the content types, which content types were being downloaded from these repositories, and made assumptions about which content types these were actually accepted by those repositories. So you can see, if you can make out here, that red crosses were instances where that item wasn't downloaded from those repositories, and green circles is where they were. So the assumption was that if there's a green circle, that content is accepted by that repository. it's not perfect, it's flawed in that the mappings aren't accurate. For instance, for us, we accept reports, but they will be categorized as other. So where reports come down on the left-hand side, there'll be a red cross for us. Actually, we do, it's just that the mappings are wrong. However, this was a good enough piece of work to support some other conclusions I made from looking at an old RSP survey about content policies. And the conclusion was that, yes, we have a pretty standard content policy, perhaps slightly more conservative than the majority. But it's an interesting way of using IRIS. And finally, if you have a developer who's on the community advisory group of IRIS, they will look at the stuff in a bit more detail than perhaps I might, and they will tell us that we need to clean up our data. So we can look at duplicates in our repository by DOIs, and yeah, as he says, if we've got something, if we've got time to do something, we can clean up the data. Okay, that's me done. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks, Chris, and thank you again to Alison and Amy and Joe. We've already had some questions in, but we've got about 20 minutes left of the webinar, so there's an opportunity for you to ask questions of any of our speakers. We've also got Paul Needham, who's our technical genius, available if you've got any questions for him. So we'll start right at the beginning, and we had a question from Alison for the Alison who was speaking, and she says, I would be interested in hearing about the level of staffing for repository support at Reading. I suspect many of us would find it useful to benchmark in relation to our own staffing levels. So Alison, could you comment on that one?
Yes, we have me, and I'm full time, but I don't do very much sort of records checking in the repository. So I would look at queries and things like that, but not the routine work. So my focus is more on the open access agenda, and particularly I'm responsible for advocacy around the university, so talks to schools and departments, for example, and courses on our people development program. And I'm also rolling out the policy for the next REF at the moment, the next for the open access policy. So our other staff, we've got a 0.5 post who focuses on checking metadata and full text records when they're added to the repository by our academics. And he's also responsible for contacting publishers to find out what their permissions are when it's not clear from other sources. And we have a part-time 0.5 temporary post at the moment who's doing similar work to that, and we're looking to extend that post to a permanent post and to being full time, because we have worked out that we will need to do that if we're going to be able to comply with the requirements of the next REF. And we also have some help from our cataloguing team in the library. They spend about 2 or 3 hours a week helping us to check the metadata records when they're added by the academics, but they don't have responsibility for checking the full text.
Thanks, Alison. Yeah, I know this is a question that has come up on some repository mailing lists about levels of staffing. I don't know, Amy or Chris, whether you want to add anything to this as well?
Yeah, shall I go? We have, I was writing it down then. I'm 0.5 and really rather open access rather than the sort of routine work in the repository or pure. We have a 0.5 who is grade 4 who does all the validating, and we correspond a lot. We sit next to each other and we talk a lot about the various issues that come up. I think Anthony is a 0.8 and he's a technician, technically based in our research office, and he looks after Pure, and by extension, when he's got some time, he looks after the repository. And then there are more sort of people in RBNI who look, who deal more directly with staff, but they don't really do the routine stuff behind the scenes.
Thanks. Chris?
Hi, yes, at the OU we have a 0.5 admin staff doing the verification, checking the metadata. I'm half-time doing administration and management, and we have a full-time developer.
Okay, thanks everyone. So Is that useful? Yeah. Thank you from Alison. Okay, we'll go on to the next question, which is probably a question for Paul Needham. It's a question from Nicola at the Glasgow School of Art, asking whether Iris can help her to find out which was, for example, the 40,000th download from their repository. Paul, could you comment on that one, please?
Hi, yeah, can you hear me right?
Yes, thanks.
I think the simple answer to that question is probably no. We store counter stats both at monthly and daily granularity, but we don't store time information. So, you know, we might be able to identify the day where any arbitrary number of download has happened, but I don't think we could accurately identify a single download and say that was the 40,000th or that was the 100,000th. And of course it also presupposes that the repository would have been participating in Irish UK from its inception. So I mean somewhere probably in the raw data that answer does lie there somewhere, but we couldn't easily dig it out.
Thanks, Paul. Is that okay, Nicola? Yeah, thanks. Okay, the next question is another question for Paul about Pure. It comes from John at Dundee, asking whether Iris UK can retrieve statistics directly from Pure, which is quite topical at the moment, and Paul will explain why. So over to you again.
Thank you. Yes, currently we cannot say much about Pure statistics. We have actually been chasing, well, Atira as was and Elsevier as is now for some time to encourage them to add Irish UK functionality to Pure. Unfortunately, those efforts so far haven't been very successful. However, there are more than half a dozen users of Pure Portal in the UK that are interested in joining Irish UK, and the next Pure UK user group meeting later this month, I'm dialing in to discuss getting Irish UK functionality added to Pure. I think if the UK user group can speak out strongly as a group, it may help to influence the addition of that functionality. I think one of the things we do need to emphasise, of course, is it's probably our own fault that we've not emphasised this enough, but when we talk about Irish UK functionality, it sounds as though it's just something designed for the UK, and therefore commercial organisations tend to, you know, that have global scope, tend to lose interest. However, of course, it would be better if we just point out that we are, in fact, applying the tracker protocol, which is part of the counter code of practice for articles. The reason that there's currently a UK focus is that we are the only organisation actually applying that protocol, which is potentially global in scope. So at the moment, with regard to Pure, the answer is no, but as far as the immediate and midterm future goes, it's probably looking a little bit brighter, you know, the possibility of that happening. I guess it's just watch this space. We will continue to push. We won't go away. We'll keep bugging Elsevier until they give in.
Does anybody else have any questions for our speakers? Please feel free to type them into the chat box.
A couple of things that came up in the presentations. A couple of the speakers mentioned about the item type mappings in Iris. We use 25 standard item types, and we do our best efforts to map the item types actually used in the repositories to those 25 item types. If you've got any queries or aren't happy about any of the mappings, do please get in touch with us and we'll see what we can do. And the other thing is, Chris mentioned differences between Iris and IR stats, and we have actually been working with IR stats, or at least Paul has, so they may become closer together going forward. So, any more questions? Let's see if anybody else is typing anything in the chat box at the moment. Doesn't look as though they are. So we'll draw things to a close. If I take us on to the final slide, you'll see our help desk contact and contacts for Alison, Amy and Chris. If you've got any specific questions, do feel free to email us at any time. We're always very pleased to hear from you and do our best to help you. Once again, can I say thank you to all our speakers. Thank you to everybody for participating in the webinar. The webinar has been recorded and will be made available on the IRIS website afterwards. We'll let you know when it's available. After the webinar closes, we'll be sending around just a very short questionnaire to get your feedback on how useful you found the webinar, any further questions you want to ask us, any suggestions for future webinars. So thank you, everybody, and goodbye.